The question is, do knowledge surveys show consistent trends and correlation to the cognitive domain? So what I'll do first is I'll talk about what knowledge surveys are. And I first started using these when we had a assessment coordinator at Humboldt State University who was very enthusiastic about knowledge surveys, and so I thought I'd give them a try. I'll define those. We'll talk about some brief results, and then I'll talk about some correlations to student performance, and then finally just close out with some final thoughts. First of all, what's a knowledge survey, and can it be used for curriculum assessment? The first principle that we have to make sure that we have down is this idea of metacognition. And so metacognition is one's critical self-awareness. You think, have I mastered this? Have I really looked at this in enough detail to understand it fully? And the concept here is that metacognition can potentially advance thinking and learning. That's the whole premise upon which these knowledge surveys are presented. So the knowledge surveys are pre- and post-tests. And they've been administered over 5 academic years in 5 upper division soils courses. Yes, 5 different courses that I teach at Humboldt State University. And these surveys are derived from 14 different course offerings. Some of them have been taught 3 times, some 4, some just once. Like, I had to teach soil fertility for the first time last spring. Like our friend Garrett Lyles, I'm a one-person shop at Humboldt State University with the support of some terrific lecturers as well. So when I talk about, I'm going to show you a snapshot of one of these knowledge surveys, but there's another term that I'm going to use, which is a gain, and a gain is the difference between the post-test and pre-test score for student self-assessed ability to answer course outcome-oriented questions. That's what a gain is. On the form, it actually says A, B, and C, but I translated those values to numbers. So a rating of 1 means that the question cannot be fully addressed for grading purposes. Number 2 or B answer means that it can be partly addressed. And 3 or A means that the student feels that they can fully address the question. So this is just a little screenshot of some of the questions I asked for my soil morphology and classification class. For example, under number 20, I can describe the kinds of information that can be obtained from soil micromorphological techniques. So if they answered A, I would be very surprised, even at the end of the course, because we don't emphasize micromorphology a huge amount. But they just do a self-assessment. Yes, I can answer this. No, if you gave me some time, I might be able to look something up and tell you or see, no way could I answer this at the present time. So these are given before the class starts and right before the final exam. And they vary from about, I went overboard on a microbiology class and had over 100 questions, which was ridiculous 1 year. But most of the time it's maybe around 40 questions that they answer. Now these questions are all centered also on learning outcomes for the class. These are the learning outcomes for the class. So they're also listed. I list my learning outcomes on a weekly basis in the syllabus, so I have very detailed syllabi. Okay, the questions, how are they selected? How did I devise them? First of all, there are some course learning outcomes that I want to achieve from a personal level. Some of them are also derived from the fundamentals of soil science professional objectives, which you talked about in the earlier session, and the courses that are included in this analysis are soil physics, soil microbiology, soil fertility, forest and range soils, and origin of classification of soils. And yes, I teach all of these classes. Don't complain, Abel. So this is kind of how we process the information. This shows 3 iterations, 3 episodes of knowledge surveys. This is from fall of 13, fall of 14, and fall of 15. Soil 360 is the origin and classifications class. I apologize for putting access title. I would have nailed a student for this, putting something like this up here. But the rating goes from 1 to 3, and I probably should have simplified that too. But the ratings go from 1 to 3. This darker kind of looks like it's black on the screen is pre-test, and then the red is the post-test. And then on the x-axis, we have all the questions that they were asked. So for Soil 360, it was 39 questions. So they're the same questions pre and post test, and it turns out that for this class, they're the same questions from year to year. They didn't change from year to year. So if you see a lot of red, what does that mean? Let's make this a little bit interactive. It means there's a gain, right? That's the difference between the pre-test and the post-test. The other way that you can use this technique is you can see where students are coming into the class. I don't have a list of what these questions are in particular. This might have been some really weird question that we've never covered in the intro class, where they start out with very low knowledge. Some of these other things, like I think the first one here on Soil 360 is, can you name the master horizons? Something like that, where they learned that in an intro class. So the questions vary from stuff that's review from a prior intro class to stuff that's very particular to that class, and they're going to make great gains in that towards the end of the semester. So this is what the knowledge surveys look like. Now, what I've done in terms of analyzing the body of data, and like I said, sorry for the recorded folks, I have a poster that I gave at a retreat for our faculty. So if you want to come up and look at this later, these are all the classes that I evaluated organized on a poster, but it would be a bunch of red flashes to you if I put it on the PowerPoint. So what I did with the questions is I tried to go in and say, well, was this a Bloom's remembering question? Was it understanding? Was it applying? Was it analyzing? Was it evaluating or creating? So does it go up in level of complexity and higher order thinking, or was it a pretty basic one? So I went in and I coded the questions 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 up the triangle to kind of set them into this Bloom's taxonomy. And this is typical of the kind of result I got. If you focus your attention up here, this shows the Bloom's categories from 1 to 6, and then this shows the gain. And what I did was I put together two of the classes, and there's not really a pattern here. There's a lot more questions, as indicated by the number of dots down here on the lower level stuff, because in soil classification, unfortunately, or fortunately, it's a language class. There's a lot of memorization, there's a lot of terms, and so that's not higher order thinking. When you get over here to some of the Bloom's questions that are 5 and 6, this is where we were mapping, or this is where they're doing block diagram exercises and things like that. So it does get more complex over here. But really, there's no pattern in terms of what their net gains were and what the Bloom's level was. They didn't, in the way that they rated themselves, there wasn't really a pattern. This diagram down here shows you the gains versus the final exam. Was this your class? Spring, or it shouldn't say spring, it should say fall 2015, I think it was. These lower dots down here, the pinkish ones, is the lowest quartile, the first, second, third, and fourth, or this is the highest quartile. They did the highest, they got the highest grades on the final exam. So this is a percent score on the final exam versus the gains on the knowledge survey. And it's just a cloud. There's really not a very good predictor there. You would hope that if they had lower gains, they would have performed lower on the exam, final exam, or if they had higher gains or had a high level of performance, they would have performed better on the final exam, but there's no pattern in there. So this is the result that was gleaned from those graphs and so forth. These are the different courses. The gain is outside the parentheses. Inside the parentheses are the number of students for which there was a good pair, because some people dropped the class or didn't do it or whatnot. So these are the pairs, number of pairs. And if you just kind of scan through these numbers, you can see that there's all over the place, there's a gain of about 1 point. They notched up from a C to a B or a B to an A or something like that. This is Vasquez, is just the lecturer that was teaching fertility before I came on board. Okay, so those are kind of the results. The best case or the best pattern that I saw was in soil fertility last spring with this quartile analysis. The only really relationship that kind of slipped out was for the highest performing students, they did predict that there was a positive relationship, R squared of 0.7. If they did better, they thought that they did better. They thought that they had made greater gains. But this is the only pattern that falls out. There's nothing here in the lower performing students, really, that falls out. So my conclusions about this technique, well, one, I don't think we're doing any harm, because there was uniformly a positive gain. At least they thought they learned something in taking these knowledge surveys. I'm not convinced that learning is spurred by a pretest and a post-test analysis of self-awareness or metacognition. However, the knowledge surveys, they are a de facto study guide, but those things are already written in the syllabus. And they take it before they start the class, and then they take it, I try to encourage them to take it right before they take the final exam. So the advanced students, they might be able to check off the items in the knowledge survey and say, I'm going to do well on this because I can check it off on the list. But if the lower students haven't gotten a mastery by that point, they're not going to perform well anyway. There's too much catching up to do. So it's not really a very good predictor, I don't think, as much as we would like it to be. The knowledge survey was worth 2-4% of the course grade just to get students to take it and to give me some feedback early on and towards the end too. But like I said, at the post-test final exam, they either know the material or not. I think it's a little late. I decided this summer, I did this analysis for our departmental retreat, and when I saw the results, I thought, you know what? I'm going to put my effort somewhere else. I'm going to try to get the students to do another hands-on or active learning activity. This was kind of data gathering for me, but I'm not really convinced that it's benefiting the students. And I also think, and we had a lot of talks this morning about student feedback on Likert scales, which is what I was using. And it's telling us how they feel, but how they feel isn't necessarily a good predictor of what they know. That's a hard truth. We have to shift away from this. We have to start testing them about what they really know. And that's a hard thing for us to do. We'd like to go out and do final exams in the field for every class. It's hard logistically to do, but I'm going to shift my gears. I'm going to put more energy into these hands-on learning activities, and hopefully next year we'll have, in this session for our division, we're going to have a greater emphasis on assessment that is really digging down to what students know how to do, not just how they feel about it. So with that, these are some slides from last weekend's 3-day 46 student soils field trip, and I'll take any questions if you have them, or we can have a conversation too. Is that Eric Brevik that's asking the question?
No.
Okay.
But a thought came to mind of one of the comments you made, and that you're a soil science program of one.
Yes. And plus lecturers.
but there's a handful of us out there that are in situations where it's one, two, very, very small groups. And, in terms of next year or the future year and sessions, how to cope in a situation where you are the soil scientist would not be a bad session. For this group to sponsor. Because it's just like you, I've taught fertility, management, intro, classification.
Solo soil scientists.
Okay. So Eric asked if it might be of value to have solo soil scientist sob sessions. SSS. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And they maybe have 40 questions.
Mm-hmm.
I was just curious if within each student's response, do you feel that they carefully read what you're asking? In other words, with course evaluations, right?
No.
It's just if they like you, they go,
That's exactly right.
Down the line, it was good. So do some of them sort of, well, they decide that they're going to pick C or what, you know, whatever the thing is, pretty much consistently down the line?
Yeah.
Would 5 questions instead of 40 that you could reasonably expect at least some students to spend some time thinking about, would you get data that would be more meaningful or interesting?
Yeah, I think so, but then you may as well put it on a final exam.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, I think you're right. Yeah. Simplifying things and having them answer in a more thoughtful sort of way, articulate sort of way, would tell you more about whether they really know it or not. It's the same thing. I think it's the same trend with with instructor evaluations.
Exactly.
You know, check the box because you like them. How much are they really thinking about the questions that are being asked?